Hi, guys.
Hi.
Good to see y'all. Tonight we're going to talk about the love and appreciation of God for each one of us and about how that most of us haven't accessed this and have actually been discouraged from it. And then we're going to do an exercise together to help us access His love and appreciation, which is something we need very much. Now, usually I have a podium to stand behind and all that kind of thing, but I don't tonight, so you're just going to have to put up with me sitting here. From birth, all of us are created with a need for love and approval. As children, we are able to take in the love and approval of our parents, and that is actually healthy for us and helpful. Though, as you all know, on this earth, that's a rather imperfect go-around. Some people have a very little, some people get a lot. I like to think of us as eating and being nourished by love and approval. As adults, however, we are no longer able to eat human love and approval. It doesn't actually work for us. And because the devil knows that we need it in order to be strong and to represent God well, he has made most of us ashamed about our need for love and approval. So you've gone to different people or looked to your work or looked to some accomplishment, some physical trait, something to get you love and approval, and you found it empty. And many times there's a scar tissue built up from our quest for something we actually are designed to have because we look in the wrong place. So the devil has gone way out of his way to get you to actually have shame in this area. So many people do it. I'm not saying you all do, but it wouldn't surprise me if some of you did. I want to tell you a couple examples of how human love and approval doesn't work, no matter on what a massive scale you get it. For instance, the Rolling Stones have been for 30 years performing before groups of 50 to 200,000 people. People stand up and cheer, dance, yell their names, and yet they've gone back to the hotel room to take heroin and to do anything to numb themselves out. Tom Cruise would probably be recognized in Dubai. If Tom Cruise went to Dubai, I'm sure somebody would come up and ask him for an autograph. He would probably be recognized by a billion people. And yet, the guy's pretty insecure and shaky in his mind. At least it seems that way to me. So, you can't really take it in anymore. Here's some symptoms that you're not getting the love and approval you need. It's almost like a food or a vitamin that you need. We will feel empty. We will be in pain emotionally, possibly physically. We will, because of our pain, feel a need to call attention to ourselves. And I'll give you an example of that. If you walked into a church, there's probably no way in the world you'd bring up your big toe to the people around you. But if you broke your big toe on the way into church, you'd probably tell 10 people about the pain in your big toe. So when we're in pain, we need to call attention to ourselves. One of the last symptoms is that we will be busy. So, for instance, if you're a woman, you have several small children. I know you have to be busy, but there's a couple of different kinds of busyness, aren't there? And if you can't rest, that busyness is a sign of your emptiness and not getting the love and approval that you need. We will also be fragile. What do I mean about being fragile? Being fragile, for instance, I've been fragile at different times in my life, but by fragile I mean we're easily offended. We could be happy, 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 and someone could cut us off in traffic and we're raging and, you know, waving our fist and all that kind of thing. Or someone could say something mean to us and we're despondent and despairing and ready to check out of life. That's an example of being fragile. I want to explain to you a little bit about ego. The word ego has kind of a bad rap in the mind of Christianity and the mind of a lot of people, but all ego is the healthy structure of the personality. It's like the bones that the personality hangs on. So in order to bear the weight of God and the presence of God, you need a strong, healthy ego. Egotism is sick ego. So if we have egotism, it's all about us. It's all about self-focus. Many of the most egotistical people will tell you and tell me as a counselor that they're pond scum, don't deserve to live, and when am I going to fire them from our counseling experience? And people really do say that. You don't have to be in love with yourself to be an egotist. All you have to do is to be self-focused overly. All right. The devil knows that we need love and approval and works against it in us. Sometimes we pretend we don't need it, but we know that we miss it. Fortunately, there's a lot of ways to receive to get us back in touch with this love and approval that we so desperately need. I'm going to show you a way that works very well. And I was just ministering to a friend who was having a very down day, and this exercise came forward. A lot of times in the course of things, the Lord will show Nancy and I something that I've never seen anyplace else. And I wouldn't be mad if I did, but it's not from our brain. We didn't figure it out. And the fruit of it, the fruit of this particular exercise I'm going to show you has been so good that actually it's kind of been embarrassing. It's almost like, hey, God, you're making me look sick. You know, I've been counseling this person for a year and they've done this exercise three or four times and look how much better they are. So, but I don't mind being shown up by God, but it's really pretty interesting how well it works. All right. There's two perspectives that we always have the love and approval of God in. First one is from the perspective is one, he created us before we came out of our mother's wombs. He put in us things that please him and things that he loves. So the first thing would be himself. There's a part of him in us, the spirit man, and he loves and enjoys himself. He approves of himself. Next, there's gifts and callings, and all of you are unique here. All of you have some special gifts, some special callings and abilities that God delights in, and he always has. So the Bible says he's the same yesterday, today, and tomorrow. In him there is no change and shadow of turning. And so his love for us is not a light switch. It does not hinge on our behavior. It is not the tail wagging the dog. So it's not like God's not like a little light switch. I approve of you. I love you. I don't approve of you. I don't love you. I approve of you. I don't love you. I approve of you. I don't love you. From this perspective of what he loves in us, I'm not saying he's not aware of our shortcomings and sin. I'm just saying he's not overcome by them. If some of you are counselors, you've heard some pretty gory things from people. Do you hate those people? I mean, if you've done this, if you do this for a living, basically the fact that the person has problems doesn't offend you particularly, and you're moving on towards their healing. So I'm not saying you're not aware of it, but I think I find that what's good about people, if you bring that forward, pushes out what's bad about people, where almost no amount of harping and yelling at them about how bad they are ever heals anything. So we do deal with the negatives in people, but counseling really needs to hold on more tightly to what God did right in you, to what God put in you already that can't actually be destroyed, regardless of those experiences you've had. And we find this again and again. And I've had people who've been cocaine addicts, who've done all sorts of reprehensible sins, who have been really, really lost. And yet, within a year or so, you find this shining, strong individual who really, while they're not perfect, are free of their presenting problems and really living a life that is God-pleasing and useful to others. Ask yourself, if you were a perfect God, would you create crappy people? I was a caterer for 20 years. I like to cook. I'm good at it. It's fun for me. It's one of the ways I express love to my family and friends. And if when I cook, things go sideways and things aren't going well in the kitchen, everybody stays out of the kitchen. Because there's pots and pans flying, dark words are spoken, you know, just rah. I hate making crappy food. Well, I'm not perfect, but God is. So the idea that he's going to make crappy, you know, loser type people is really not on the possibility list. Okay. So from the perspective of how he created you, he loves and approves of you. And you can access to today. And I'm going to show you how. And I'm not saying the way I'm going to show you is the only way. I'm just saying it's a way. Another way that's a wonderful way to access that is to get the Father's love, which has been real important in my life. And since I've had that, I've had a sense of his love and approval on a daily basis. It doesn't mean my character has been perfect or my behavior has been perfect. It just means he loves and approves of me. Much like a parent, you wouldn't think much of a parent who is like on again, off again with their kid. Like, I hate you, I like you, I approve of you, I don't approve of you. And we're not saying you endorse everything they do. We're just saying there's a constancy to your love and to your vision of that child as being valuable, important, necessary. And there's most of you here have had kids, is that true? Yeah? Yeah, I know you had a whole bunch of them. Well, even though you're aware of their faults, you are also aware of their positives, even when they're being rotten. Have you guys ever had the experience of looking in on your little kid's little head sticking out of the covers after they've been horrible all day and going, oh, look at them, I just love them, you know? Okay. There's another perspective that I want to tell you about is that God lives in eternity. He doesn't live in time. So I'm going to give you a little class about that. I want you to imagine a little block on the floor here. Most of us here on earth feel that time and gravity are constants, and we can depend on them unfailingly to be with us. So if we fly to India, we know that we'll be in a different time zone, but there's still time. And we don't expect the pen to fly out of our pocket, do we? But on the other hand, if you go up in the Challenger, and I don't really know how many miles, but it's not very many miles until your pen starts floating around. And you start floating around, and guess what? When you go to heaven, there's no time. Because you can't have time and eternity simultaneously, because the nature of eternity is no time. So God sees you, and I'm addressing this to saved Christians, okay? I'm not going to try to take a bigger bite than that. There's several billion people, right? There's a lot of saved Christians around. From that perspective, he sees you, and again, I'm going to use things that don't totally work, but that's because our perspective requires some kind of sense of time just so we can talk, okay? Have you ever gone to a conference or a prayer time or something and come back with your face shining, your heart all cleaned up, feeling lighter and stronger? Okay, how do you think you're going to feel after you've been, again, for our sakes, in heaven for 10,000 years? You think maybe you clean up a little better? Do you think you might look better, you might act better? All right, from that perspective, God, as he sees you, let's just do a little exercise. We'll pretend that there's a block here on the floor, like a little kid's building block, you know, ABC block. Okay, you're going to be a little ant, and you're going to walking on the block. Okay, this is the way most of us perceive time. We start our life on the edge of the block, the left-hand edge, and then we walk forward, and midlife is in the middle of the block, and then at the end of the block, you fall off the block. That's bye-bye, you're dead. Okay, God, we're going to perceive as a dome over the block, a great big dome, but actually he's a never-ending dome. But for our sakes, he's going to be a great big dome. So he sees you as he approved of you when he created you in his own hands, and then he's going to see you as you are in the moment, still aware of he's aware of your faults and your sin. That's not the issue. The issue is that he sees also all the rest at the same time. And from the perspective of, again, for our sakes, 10,000 years in the future. Heaven is not an endless Baptist picnic party. Thank you very much. I always say I would plead for death. You know, where you just blanked out and, you know, the television turned off and the little wavy lines went, as opposed to a never-ending Baptist church social. But fortunately, there's responsibility, there's growth, there's joy, there's proximity to the throne. You know, the Bible says, you know, if there were not many mansions in my house, I would have told you. Well, it doesn't mean that you are like Donald Trump trying to get the biggest apartment complex. It means there's different possibilities and responsibilities and joys in heaven that unfold forever and ever and ever. And I am a very easily to be bored individual. I like new everything. And so for me, that's really exciting. and I'm, well, I'm very chipper about being alive, I'm going to really be chipper about being in heaven. So from that perspective, he loves and approves of you. Okay, so he sees you from these two perspectives at a time. And our exercise tonight is going to let you break down some of the scar tissue, break down some of the walls that you've put up and that Satan has conned you into. And shame is a very driving, scary force. And people, if some of you do this counseling work, you'll learn you don't shame people if you can possibly help it, because they will tear your head off. Okay? You get real safe with people before you ever touch an area that may have toxic shame, because they'll come after you right off the bat. Okay? So we're going to tear down these walls, and it reminds me of like the children of Israel going through the, you know, the Red Sea, with the Red Sea piled up on either side, quivering, ready to go. Okay, that's the love and approval of God from those two perspectives. And we're going to take down some of the walls that we've put up, and some of it will come in upon us. Okay? All right, ready to do it? All right, and I always judge things by the fruit. So I can put up with weird or different as long as the fruit's good. I'm a very pragmatic guy. I was a caterer for 20 years. There's not much pretending in catering. You are either there with the food on time or you are not. You see what I mean? It's not like, well, he intended to be there. I'm sure he had good plans about bringing the food. There's none of that. Okay. So here's the exercise, you guys. I want you to ask God to show you from those two perspectives how he sees you as he looks upon you. Again, from those two ways. From his timeless view, from how he felt about you when he created you. And then I want you to ask him to let you feel how he feels about you. Now, for some people, this is harder, because we have scar tissue around our feelings. So we've protected ourselves for so long that sometimes it's hard to feel a positive experience. You know anybody that can't receive a compliment or starts wiggling if you're, you know, kind to them? If you get both, that's even better. You might get a picture and a feeling. And we're going to arbitrarily call that 20%, your first picture and your first feeling. I don't mind if you just get one thing or whatever. And so as you get those, I want you guys to raise your hands, and then we're going to go around and ask what God showed you and what your feelings were. And we're going to save questions and deep comments. I did this with a sort of a convict guy about a month ago, and he started to tell us in great detail his various crimes and disgraces and general mayhem he'd been involved in for the last 40 years. We're really not looking for that, but since he was big and very violent, I let him talk for quite a while. And it was funny, though, wasn't it? It's not quite what we're looking for, Rocky. You know what I mean? But anyway, and then we're going to call that arbitrarily 20%. And this is modeled after the Randy Clark healing model, which is if someone has a migraine headache, you put your hands on their head and pray for them. And if they feel a little better, they're not totally healed, you say, well, what percentage healed do you feel? And they'll say 20%. And you say, well, can you believe God for 10% more? And they go, yeah, I can ask God for 10%. You know, that's not such a big bite, is it? A lot of people can't believe God for 100% healing. But if you say, can you believe for 10% more? You say, well, God, can I have 30%? And you ladder them up to about 80%. If you get to 80% in almost every case, they're healed. And that, by the way, works really a lot better than the way I used to heal people, which was by yelling, heal, real loud, which mostly just scares them and makes them blink. So that I got 20 healings in 20 years and 300 feelings in 5 years doing it the other way. So guess which way works better. So, all right. And then at the very end, I'm going to tell you a couple stories from just other people's experiences. But yours might be so cool we won't even do that. We'll see. Yeah.
At what point do you want me to turn the recording off?
I want to do the exercise.
Okay, all right. And then do you want to start a new one so that it's not so long?
Sure.
Okay.